Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 405. Jeff Lieben is on because, well, several reasons. We have several things to talk about when it comes to legal stuff. One of the big stories is that, you know, he just sort of sensed critical mass. Either former President Donald Trump is going to be indicted by the special counsel, the DOJ, or he's not. It's going to go one way or the other. Trump is asking for meetings. They're saying no. And then we just got some breaking news that Chet has not even heard, which may go into his analysis. So, Wheels, what do we know?
Yeah, so the trend, it was trending on Twitter, but Andrew Feinberg's a reporter for The Independent. He had a story an hour ago that says prosecutors are going to ask grand jurors for a vote on an indictment as early as tomorrow. But then he followed that with this, and I'll just read it word for word. This is Andrew Feinberg from The Independent, said it is understood that Mr. Trump's last White House chief of staff, Mark Meadows, has agreed to plead guilty to several lesser federal crimes in exchange for his testimony under a limited grant of immunity. So that's about an hour ago.
Chet, how's that hit you?
Doesn't surprise me. I haven't heard that before, but the headline story, of course, for the week is that Meadows testified in front of the grand jury. Now, Meadows, of course, because he was the chief of staff, has the ability, I think, to give them information, and them being the grand jury, information not only about the January 6th insurrection, but also about the documents case. So, and it's interesting to me that the reporting has been that they're close to an indictment. Jack Smith is close to an indictment with respect to the documents case. And so, interestingly, you have Meadows testifying as, if that's true, as one of the last witnesses. And so probably what was occurring is that Meadows, his lawyers were meeting with the DOJ lawyers in order to work out some deal, because I'm sure what they told him was that he's culpable conspiratorially, both on the January 6th situation as well as the documents case. And so that deal could have been struck anywhere from immunity, total immunity, or a deal for a an indictment on a lesser crime with a promise that they would advise the court, obviously, of his cooperation when it comes to the sentence and the sentencing guidelines, so, which would impact the amount of time that he would get.
So, Chet, knowing what you know, how unlikely is it in your mind that Mark Meadows would plead guilty to crimes in exchange for testimony and then not indict Donald Trump?
Unlikely. Meadows is not their target. I suspect that their target is Donald Trump. And it's a pyramid effect. So what you do is you immunize or you cut deals with the people at the bottom of the pyramid so that you can get them to testify and cooperate with respect to the next rung of the pyramid and all the way up the ladder. And so I'm sure that the target of the grand jury, both the January 6th grand jury as well as the documents grand jury, was Donald Trump. So it would be shocking to me that they would cut a deal with Mark Meadows and not indict Donald Trump. Now, so, you know, the other part of this equation, Dave, is, you know, this is new territory. You're indicting a former president, and you're going to do it where this trial potentially could occur during the presidential election. I mean, that's heavy duty stuff.
Amazing.
And so, but I think that they're at the point now where they've got to fish or cut bait. And I'm talking about DOJ. You know, they waited long enough. They've waited a long time to get to this point. They've dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, as they're known to do. And so I think that now it's either you're going to indict him now or you're not going to indict him. You can't wait until after, certainly, the presidential election. That wouldn't be a good idea.
So, Chet, I know you're not a political guy, but let's say that Trump is indicted Friday. And he's indicted on something pretty serious by Jack Smith. What are the chances? What are even the options? Because I'm I'm the front runner right now to be the Republican nominee for the White House. Is there any way to possibly pursue the indictment, or do they necessarily have to wait until after the election?
No. I think that they will not suppress the indictment. I think if they get the indictment against him, I think that that will be disclosed. I think he will be arrested, similar to the way that he was arrested in New York. I think then he will be arraigned, and the court then will set a timetable as to when he will be tried. And in the federal system, that system is going to run more expeditiously than the state court.
So there could be a trial before the election.
Yes. I think that there can be. Now, he's going to do whatever he can, I'm sure, or his lawyers will do whatever they can to drag their feet. They'll file motions. They'll file all sorts of pretrial issues that the court will have to take up. They'll file suppression motions, for example, on various pieces of evidence, not the least of which will be the testimony, if any, of Mark Meadows, and whether or not that there was anything privileged about that testimony, and whether or not they can use that testimony to convict him. The other interesting issue on all of this is currently now a grand jury in the Southern District of Florida in Dade County in Miami has been convened. My guess is that the purpose of that is for venue purposes. So the question is whether or not if they're going to charge an obstruction, that he obstructed justice when he concealed the documents from the government that necessitated the search warrant, et cetera, whether or not that venue for that occurred in D.C. or whether it occurred in Miami. My belief is that the obstruction occurred in Miami. Now, there could be also the crime of the possession occurring of these National Archives records or presidential records that don't even have to be classified documents, but all of that occurring in Washington, D.C. as well. And thus the reason for that grand jury.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was going to say, because those would be two separate charges for January 6th and the documents in two separate venues, but could be going on at the same time.
They could be. And you're talking about an obstruction. And we also don't know, for example, whether or not there was any dissemination of these classified documents, national defense potential documents that occurred in either D.C. Or in Miami. So you've got to pick the right venue. So if the crime is occurring in the state of Florida, then you better get the venue right. Otherwise, you're going to get knocked out of that particular jurisdiction. Now, having the case heard in Florida, I don't think benefits the government because you've got a large Republican bunch of voters in Florida. Plus, he lives in Florida. That's the current state of his residence. So I think that from the standpoint of the government, you're going to have more pro-Trump people that you'll find in Miami than you will in Washington, D.C. So I'm guessing that probably if they can, they may try to avoid Miami and probably look at D.C. But I don't think they're going to make it in D.C. on the obstruction counts.
So
I think that'll be Miami.
Moving on to the LIV PGA lawsuit, now that it's been settled and they've merged, but what can you tell us about that whole process?
But shocking. Shocking. I can't imagine that the PGA was going to get together with LIV and form one corporation. It's going to be a for-profit corporation. Now, recognizing that lawsuits were filed, and so I think that Jay Monahan, who is the head of the PGA, was talking today or yesterday about the cost associated with the litigation that LIV filed. LIV sued the PGA alleging anti-competitive practices for banning the players that went to LIV that they couldn't play on the PGA. The PGA countered, claiming LIV was stifling competition, et cetera. So that's expensive litigation, and it's litigation that LIV could afford to continue with, but the PGA could not. And so I suspect that part of the thinking of the PGA and Jay Monahan in getting together with LIV and putting together one group, albeit a Saudi-backed group, that it was financially impossible to continue with that litigation successfully as well. So, you know, I think there are not the least of which I think are the players. I mean, here are players that left the PGA, got millions and millions of dollars. Players like Tiger Woods, that the reporting is that, you know, he was offered $1 billion to go with the LIV group. He passed it up. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. So now you have a situation where these next year, the LIV players are going to be on the tees in PGA events with the folks that didn't go to LIV and didn't collect that money and stayed loyal to the PGA, who ultimately didn't stay loyal to them in the final analysis. And that's not even counting the criticism that's been launched against not only Jay Monahan, but by the people, the victims of 9/11, where you have a Saudi-backed group financing that are accused of various human rights violations, sponsoring and subsidizing basically what is commercially relevant PGA type sports and events that are watched on TV.
Wheels, from a sports point of view, what do we know, if anything, about, because I know, like, this is a fraternity, professional golfers, and we watch each other's back, and we compete hard, but we protect each other, but do we have rifts? Do we have open rifts? Have the PGA people said anything about this, like, it'll be a cold day in hell when I play the LIV player, or what?
There's not been any uniform response. Some guys have been like, well, great, I turned down all kinds of money to stay loyal to the PGA Tour, and now they've sold me out. You got a lot of the guys that went to the LIV Tour that are celebrating. They're like, yay, we're all a family again, and we get to be on the tour again. But, you know, one thing we haven't heard, anything from Tiger Woods. I have not heard a word from Tiger on any of this, and I'm curious to see what, if anything, he's going to have to say about it. But there's been a mixed reaction, and a lot of the guys on the tour were upset because they found out on Twitter. They didn't have any say in it. Yeah. They didn't have any part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that this weekend the PGA is up at the RBC up in Canada, and I think that Monahan went up there, and I think that it was kind of a cold day in hell for him at a meeting that he had with the players. I think that he was criticized, called a traitor, and all that sort of stuff. So, there's some hard feelings. But at the end of the day, I mean, you tell me, what are they going to do? I mean, what are these players going to do? They're not going to play?
Well, no, they'll play, yeah.
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 I'm more curious about what viewers are going to do. whether or not viewers are going to protest or if they're just going to be like, well, this is the new reality.
Yeah, well, you know, interestingly, you know, the PGA, notwithstanding the lawsuit, but the PGA had won that battle because the only, I mean, Liv, the TV was just what, one station that just recently started to broadcast, you know, their tournaments. And so, you know, from my perception at least, and I watch a lot of golf, the PGA came out victorious on that. That's why, you know, I was shocked on Monday. Somebody said to me, my oldest, JC, said to me, you know, do you ever think that the Liv is going to get together with the PGA? I said, well, not only no, but hell no. And he said, well, they just did.
Yeah.
I said, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding. So it was shocking. And I'm sure that, you know, having that leaked to the media and having those guys that stayed loyal to the PGA finding out about it, because Monahan kept this a secret, claiming that, you know, this was organizational issues and didn't affect the players. So he did this behind closed doors. And so they find out, you know, on Twitter that now all of a sudden the PGA and Liv are but one organization. So, and they passed up millions of dollars because they stayed loyal.
Yep.
I mean, that's not a way to, in my opinion, to run a corporation or a business.
What a story.
Not good.
Amazing.
Not a good idea.
Thank you, Chad. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Probably talk to Chad tomorrow. I'm sure stuff's going to happen with Trump and Mark Meadows. That's all going to get out. Pence has a town hall tonight on CNN. And so a lot of stuff happening. 426 DGS. Happy Wednesday to you. What's the move out method?
Okay, so this is a way that people are using to clean out their closet, clean out their rooms, whatever. They are pretending that they have to move and they are setting a deadline of like, I have to be out of here by the 30th. So then they go through and they, you know, organize all their stuff. And it's if they're moving, because typically people get rid of a lot of stuff whenever they move. And this is just a way of people to use a psychological trick to get themselves to clean out their stuff and organize their things.
I get it. I like it, except that I know that I'm lying to myself.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know you're not moving, though.
So I can take it back.
Yeah.
But do you guys ever just, like, look? I've been doing this a lot lately, just, like, looking around my house at all my stuff and just being like, I just want to throw it all away. Like, I don't need all this junk. Like, I just want to
throw
away, like, 90% of my stuff.
For years, I lived with a buddy of mine from law school named Ricky, and we were both about the same level of dirty. And what we would do is we would have a party because we knew we had to clean up for the party. And so we'd be like, you know what? This place is just a pigsty. Let's have a party.
Yeah.
Which kind of worked because we'd clean it up, and then the party would trash it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back to square one.
Yes, exactly right.
I'm just fascinated by that kind of stuff, though. Why do we have to set these fake scenarios for ourselves to get ourselves to do things? I can only clean out my closet unless I'm pretending that I'm moving out of my home and I only have one option, and it's to get rid of all this stuff by a certain date. We know that that's not true. Like you said, you're not able to fully trick yourself, but many people are able to. It's just funny, like these games that we play with ourselves as adults to get ourselves to do anything.
Feels like something a life coach would tell you to do.
Oh, yeah, like Marie Kondo or something.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say that because I've never talked to a life coach. Maybe they're really smart. But, like, that just – at what point do you just realize there are things I have to do as a grown person and I'm just going to have to do it? Because that's how I am. I hate doing those things. I will leave something sitting somewhere forever. But at some point, I know that I'm going to have to take care of it, and then eventually I do.
But then it's more palatable to make it a game.
Yeah.
Or turn
what
it into an exercise.
What percentage of people are – completely deadline based, and what percentage are they get it done way before the deadline?
Well, I think a lot of people.
I was gonna say, I think a majority are deadline based.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That's why we need the deadlines in the first place.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
438 DGS. Let's do some audio.
All right, we can start with yours, Dave. You have the Chris Christie Trump audio here. Would you like to hear it?
I would.
A lonely, self-consumed, self-serving mirror hog is not a leader. The person I am talking about, who is obsessed with the mirror, who never admits a mistake, who never admits a fault, and who always finds someone else and something else to blame for whatever goes wrong, but finds every reason to take credit for anything that goes right, is Donald Trump. It's not amusing anymore. It's not entertaining anymore. It is the last throes of a bitter, angry man who wants power back for himself, not for you.
To his credit, he's the only one saying it like that. You know, Pence is playing patty cake, and then people like Haley, who thinks that she may be his VP, are sort of giving him soft little punches. Chris Christie is the only one I've seen so far that's really gone in that hard.
He must know that he's not going to win. He's just there to do this, right?
Could be.
But it's also, I think he's just, he's like, well, if/when I don't win the presidency, I'll just be done. Like, he's the reason that all the other guys are playing so soft with Trump is because, as we saw the exact thing last time, if Trump wins, you then have to bend the knee and kiss the ring, and they don't want to go so far that they are shut out from the option of bending the knee and kissing the ring and getting into his good graces and winning their whatever other race they might run for, or becoming one of his stupid cabinet members or whatever. So I think is why they are going so soft, because it's like, well, I don't want to, he becomes the president, I don't want to not be able to be his secretary of transportation or whatever.
Right.
So my audio is Ron DeSantis did an event, spoke to the crowd, and then afterwards went out into the crowd and was talking to people. And a reporter asked him why he wasn't speaking to the press or talking to people. And DeSantis asked, are you blind?
Why not take any questions from voters, Governor? Governor, how come you're not taking questions from voters?
No, stop coming up to me, talk to me. What are you talking about? I'm not here working with people. Are you blind?
What?
Are you blind?
I'm not blind.
Okay, so people are coming up to me, talking to me, whatever they want to talk to me about.
I like tough. I like firm. I don't like pissy. Mm-hmm. I don't like my leaders to be that fragile. Just personal.
They all are from time to time, though.
From time to time is fine. Obama, George Washington, I'm sure at some point was like, I'm going to chop you down like I did that cherry tree. But when that is your default mode, when you are so easily provoked, I just don't like it.
Yeah, there's another, and I 100% agree, but the point that, I don't even know if it was a valid question in that moment, because maybe it wasn't an appropriate question at that time given the event. But one thing I can't take are people that pretend that they're tough guys and will only talk to people that will throw them softballs. And yeah, I'm talking about Josh Hawley. I mean, he writes a whole book about being masculine and we need manhood, but you won't talk to anybody that won't kiss your ass. If you're that good and you belong in that role and you're that smart, you should be able to handle questions from people that have differing opinions from you, and you should be able to handle that without, as you put it so eloquently, Dave, getting pissy.
Well, yeah. And DeSantis is so easily provoked. And I just don't like that response. Like, I remember saying it
In fairness, so is Biden.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
100%.
Like, look, fat.
Yeah, what was the last one he did? He's like, listen here, pal.
Yeah, there's a lot of listening here, pal. They'll look fat. We can fight right now or whatever.
Yes. When that Chesterfield Nazi had the U-Haul, can you imagine if he'd have gotten him in there? You're like, hey, look here, Joker, you take me off of this dolly here right now.
Pulling his pants all the way up to here and putting up his dukes.
Yeah, I don't like that whole sensitivity thing. Like, listen, if you want to be the big bad wolf in some ways, I'm tough, I'm taking on everybody, then take on everybody. Don't only go where you're going to get soft questions and an easy out. You know, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is a flaw in me. But if I were, I'm never going to do it because it's ridiculous. But if I were ever in that position, I wouldn't back down from a single question. Not one question or questioner. If you're good enough for the job, you're good enough to handle anything that somebody throws at you.
So which piece of audio would you like to play, Wheels?
Because you have a lot. I don't know why I always have so many. Let's go with the one that's about, is there one there that's labeled dictionaries?
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting to me because we think of dictionaries as the authority on what words mean, right? I mean, like, we need to know what it means. We go look it up. But this is a scholar by the name of Daniel McClellan. I brought him up a lot of times. He's actually like a biblical scholar. But he talks here about what dictionaries are actually meant to be historically.
One of the problems with dictionaries is they're supposed to be following after usage and just reporting on usage, just saying this is how they're using it. But we've kind of flipped that on its head, and now we use dictionaries to say, this is the only way you're allowed to use it. If you use it another way, that's wrong. Yeah,
that's right.
And that is putting the cart before the horse. Dictionaries do not adjudicate meaning. They report on usage, but they do so using a fundamentally distorting framework, this idea that we can reduce.
You are blowing people's minds right now, Dan.
I'm making a lot of people angry. I know that because every time I talk about this, I make people angry.
So who is that interviewer?
I don't know, but he was kind of a doofus. But I never have thought of it that way. Remember how, you know, because people.
I never knew that.
I didn't either. But originally, the dictionaries, according to this is a guy that's worked in the academic world studying biblical history, studying like written and oral histories, and that these things were created just to say this is how people are using this term now. So when people get mad that new generations use words differently, and then that gets added to the dictionary, like, oh, how do we add that to the dictionary? That's all a dictionary is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Is basically like a newspaper. It's reporting what is happening with the words at those times, but then we take it and say it can only mean this thing from before,
yeah,
because that's how we meant it when we used it whatever time period in the past.
So I have a WashU law degree. 90% of my use of the dictionary was when I was 12 years old, looking up dirty words with Kevin Fine, reading them aloud, and then running out of the room. 90% of the time I've cracked a dictionary. That's what it was for.
So good.
Welcome to DGS. I have a feeling tomorrow and Friday are going to be big news days. I just kind of sense it in your bones, like on the Trump thing. I have a feeling he's going to be indicted this week.
Wow.
Just think about that. They're talking about espionage. They're talking about obstruction.
Yeah.
A former president. And then, like Chet was saying, this Chet did so much criminal defense work in the federal system. State system is kind of a cluster. And the federal, like, the trains run on time, right? I mean, federal judges are the last bastion of royalty here in the U.S. So if that judge wants that trial to be done before the election in 2024, it will be.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I know I heard him say that. It's amazing to think because nothing on the local level happens like that.
No, feds don't mess around, and especially when it's something like that, they're gonna clear the way. We're a former president's being indicted on felony charges of espionage if that's what happens. So we could have a scenario where he is the candidate and a convicted felon at the same time. It's absolutely, put aside whether you love Trump or hate him, just American history. 100 years from now, people will study this having no feelings about Trump.
Yeah, who is the first felon?
Like
to...
they'll, right. you know what I mean? Like now you say Donald Trump and people either, you know, they are passionate.
Right.
100 years from now, no one's going to care. It's just going to be history.
It's funny the putting it that way too, like taking out being a fan or not being a fan or whatever. We can all agree, though, that, like, before him, anything like this is a deal breaker.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
You're done.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the things that undid presidential candidates in the past are so below this on the level of importance. And yet, that's how big of a change has been made since 2016. I mean, John Edwards was done in by cheating scandal.
I think it's the biggest political change in the history of the country. What Donald, again, I can't stand Donald Trump, and I don't think it's a good change, but I would at least admit that this human being has made as big a change to this country as any other, as much as George Washington, as much as Abraham Lincoln, I mean, when you talk about impactful presidents, he's in the final four.
So change or revelation?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've had revelations. I didn't know a third of the country felt this way. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could wield this much power in this manner. I didn't know that.
Right.
Didn't realize that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.